Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Cheryl Colmer from the Neil Squire Society. So tell me a little bit about the Neil Squire Society.
Well, Neil Squire was a young university student in British Columbia in the early 1980s. When he was in a car accident that left him a tetraplegic. So I think a lot of us are familiar with the term paraplegic and quadriplegic, and tetraplegic is a higher level on the neck injury. And so he was left unable to move his arms and legs and unable to speak. And Neil's relative, Bill Cameron, an engineer, used technology that enabled Neil to communicate through an old 1980s computer using Morse code that created letters on the computer screen through sips and puffs that represented dots and dashes of Morse code. And then when Neil died in 1984, the Neil Squire Society was born with the vision of using technology to help people who have disabilities have the same choices and opportunities and quality of life as any other person. So those were our beginnings 32 years ago.
So can you tell me about some of the latest happenings with the society?
We've expanded from British Columbia. We're in Saskatchewan, Ontario, and New Brunswick. And our core programming in Ontario is employment services, where we work with people who've been out of work for 3 years or more. That's our federal funding requirement, is that people have been out of work for 3 years. And so they maybe have had an injury or an illness. We've really expanded who we serve to, that it's not from those starting places of just severe physical disabilities. We're working with cross disabilities, learning disabilities, mental health, and helping people get back to work after an injury or an illness. So going through the whole career exploration process to develop a strong employment plan, right through to job search support, and this year we're administering a wage subsidy to also help people who've been out of work for a while get back into the workforce by providing the employer with some support. So that's really our key piece in Ontario. But we also, through our Vancouver office, we're partnering to deliver a distance computer comfort program. And that's for people who are wanting to learn basic computer skills, somebody who's maybe made it through teen years into adulthood and still don't have those basic computer skills. And so through distance technology, we match volunteer tutors with individuals who want to learn those basic computer skills. And they work together for a couple of hours on a weekly basis until they've built their confidence around those basic computer skills and then could move on to more community computer skills training to move past the basic computer skills level.
So, are there any challenges in this work?
gosh. I think for nonprofits, funding is always a challenge. So particularly for that computer comfort program where people are learning the basic computer skills, we don't attach any employment outcomes to that. So we're always looking for funding to run that computer program. And although it's volunteer-driven, we still have paid staff to coordinate the volunteers and the learners. And being that that is serving people with disabilities, there's also a component of teaching assistive technology for people that need to access the computer through assistive technology. So there's a cost related to that as well. And we've had the most success securing funding for the Computer Comfort Program through corporate grants, most recently RBC Foundation. I think funding is always the challenge. For our employment program, CAM, we've been lucky to receive federal funding through the Opportunities Fund for Persons with Disabilities. And that's been yearly funding where we're responding to calls for proposals, sometimes yearly, sometimes two-year projects, sometimes three-year projects. But we've kept that the employment services going through the federal government funding.
So, on the converse side of things, in your time with the society, what's been the greatest success that you've witnessed?
I've been with the Nail Flyer Society for 15 years. My anniversary's coming up in July. I feel as if I'm learning new things every day, and so it's still really exciting to work for an organization like Nail Flyer Society. From the top down, our executive director is in Vancouver, but we've got good communication links to him, Gary Birch. And because of the groundbreaking work that he's done in research and development, he's an engineer, the society and Gary have won awards. So I think just the recognition to work for an organization that's really well recognized on the national level, and then on the local level, where we hear from partners in the Ottawa area that we're kind of the only game in town for employment services in some people's eyes. Of course, there's lots of organizations providing really good employment services for people with disabilities, but I'm really proud to work for an organization that we say we're small but mighty, serving people and providing really in-depth employment services to help people over the long term. So I think that federal government funding allows us to work with people for longer periods of time than a lot of other funding allows. And so we're supporting those folks who've been out of work for the 3 years at least. It takes a little bit longer to help people develop their confidence again, build their energy levels if there is a physical illness or disability, and get back to work. I think it's a bit of everything that makes me, when I think back and reflect on the greatest things that we've been doing, it's a little bit all over the place, Cam.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
For those of you who heard the early days of the show, you might remember one of my first segments was on the Nail Flyer Society. Now, coming up next, we have an on-location interview with a very special guest.
This is Cam Wells here with
Italo Lubignan, host of the Canadian Sport Fishing Show.
So, you were just here at the ICHA's annual fishing derby. Tell me a little about that.
You know what? It's an event that we look forward to every year. This year was the 14th annual ICHA Handicapable Fishing Derby. It had one of the biggest turnouts of the last 14 years. It was so nice to see so many old friends, to make new friends, and to see so many happy faces catching fish right in front of Windsor and the Ambassador Bridge.
So, what were some of the greatest highlights?
Oh, I love seeing the smiles on the people's faces. When you see some of the children, especially those that are like under 15 years of age, and they're holding up a little goby or a rock bass, and they take it in for that weigh-in. The fish might only be 2 or 3 ounces, but the smiles on their faces is priceless.
So, as these were fishermen with disabilities, did you notice any modified equipment being used?
Well, not really. They were using, they had assistance from volunteers. They were using the same type of gear that I used to do the fishing show, spinning outfits and so on. Some of them were in special chairs, but other than that, they got a little bit of help from some of the volunteers, but they did really great.
So, were there any challenges in putting together this year's event?
Well, I think every year, Papagano, who coordinates it, has a challenge of getting sponsors, but every year he's also had a growth. So I think the biggest challenge is getting the people to keep supporting the event financially so that all of the expenses are looked after. And then a lot of the sponsors that provide services, whether it's the food, the entertainment, the prizes that are given away. So I think that's one of the challenges. The actual event with the volunteers really takes care of itself because the people put their hearts into it, and it's a real blessing to those that participate.
On the subject of how it warms the community's hearts, what did you see in terms of public reaction to today?
Well, the people, even people that were just using the park that weren't part of the event, would really be drawn to what was going on, and the comments were all favorable. That it looked like it was something really good for the community. And it really is. You know, with some of these families, it's the only day that they can actually take someone out that is challenged and that has a physical, that's handicapable, to actually be out on the water, enjoy fresh air, fishing, and in a safe environment with all the other things that are provided to them.
So what would you say was the greatest success from today?
I think making the people have a really enjoyable day that otherwise would be probably at home, maybe watching TV. To me, that's the highlight, seeing the smiles on their faces and seeing the satisfaction of the parents or guardians that are with them to know that the people that they're looking after are really having a wonderful day and that everything's provided for them.
So what do you foresee for the future of this event?
I think we're seeing growth every year. In the future, you're going to see more volunteers, because the word is going out. There were people today that came from other provinces and states, like from across the border, to help out. And they got up very early this morning to come here, and they spent the 4 hours to help. I think you're going to see more volunteers because they see it's such a worthwhile project here in Windsor. And you're going to see more sponsors, more prizes. So it's going to result in the growth of the event, bigger and bigger.
So if you could send any message about the need for events such as this one, what would you say?
You know, we are our brother's keepers, and when we have people in our community that are less fortunate or that are challenged, if we can do anything to help them, personally or through an event like this, actually the event is the easiest because you have a lot of other help. I would encourage people in the Windsor and surrounding area, this whole part of southwestern Ontario, to get involved for next year's event, whether they can be a sponsor, whether they want to be a volunteer and come and help out, or whether they know someone that is challenged that would enjoy being out for a few hours. I would really encourage them to come out and participate.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure, and I hope to see you again next year.
I'll be here.
Okay, Cam. God bless you.
Jerry.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages. So stay tuned.
Summer is in full swing with the 2016 Carousel of Nations. Over the weekends of June 17th to 19th and June 24th to 26th, ethnocultural groups in the Windsor area open their cultural centers in celebration of their country. Visitors can delight in the tastes, sounds, and traditions of these cultures as they present music, dance, history, art, and especially food. Once you start indulging in Bavarian pork hocks, Hungarian cabbage rolls, Filipino adobo chicken, Greek flaming cheese, and so much more, you'll want to visit them all. Find more information about the various villages and operating times at carouselofnations.com.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Cheryl Colmer from the Neil Squire Society and our good friend Italo Labignan, host of the Canadian Sport Fishing Show. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from one of our favorite guests here at HandyLink, Joanna Zien. She'll be giving us an update about her work on behalf of the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. So tell me a little bit about the results of the recent Gutsy Walk.
The Gutsy Walk was an incredible success. Just to give you some background, last year at our walk, we raised about $24,000. And this year's goal was $30,000. So we reached our goal the night before the walk and then raised an additional $17,000 on the walk day. So in total, we raised $47,000 this year for the Gutsy Walk.
It's amazing. What aspects of it did the community seem to respond the best to?
I think that they really kind of took to the fact that we had a lot more passion and heart go into the walk this year. And there was a lot of talk in the past about volunteer burnout and also donation fatigue? Donor fatigue. And so the new volunteers, I think, were able to reach out to a different crowd and tap into a pool of donors that had never been tapped into before. And it brought a lot of excitement to the event. And also the fact that we had a lot of additional features to the walk that they didn't have in previous years. Like, we had Hutch perform, the Infidels, and Bobby Sproat, and that was a really, really, really impactful touch just on the registration area. They were able to calm everyone down and bring a lot of excitement. And then at the other end of the field where, because at a 5K walk around a loop, right? So the other end of the loop, we had a DJ, Jamie, from Pretty Little Weddings, pumping everyone up so that then when they were coming around, they got some more energy from that. I think that was exciting. And the rain brought a lot of excitement, too.
So, were there any challenges in this year's walk versus previous years?
Well, the fact that it was my first year coordinating, it was difficult for me just because I had no clue what to expect. No matter how many times I looked at the park or visited the park or thought about how things would go or what we needed to do, I would never fully understand until I saw the event for myself. And I think I did, just patting myself on the back here, but I think I did a pretty good job with everything. And next year, hopefully, we'll have more food, better entertainment, and no rain.
So, after the experience of coordinating this year, do you hope to do that again in years to come?
Absolutely. I had a lot of fun organizing the Gutsy Walk, and I think my strengths are in event coordination. So this is how I want to help out and give back to the community. And Crohn's and Colitis is definitely a charity that really deserves the attention that we're giving it this year.
So overall, what was the greatest success of the walk?
Just seeing all the smiling and happy faces and hearing stories from people that we really like to thank us, all the volunteers, because there's no one prior to this event for the young people in my life. I hadn't heard that they had Crohn's or colitis before, and they had told me that they didn't really have anyone to fight for them before. So they were so, so grateful, and that really brought a tear to my eye because I realized that I was really making a difference.
That's the thing, though. When you're facing a condition alone, it's infinitely more difficult. Once you build that bridge, you have that realization for the first time that there are people who understand and there are people who can provide support. You're really changing the whole game for them.
Yeah, and I've had a lot of happy friends approach me and tell me they have Crohn's and colitis and how grateful they are. And even though they're still living with the condition and having to go through medication, I think it's making their lives a lot happier and a lot easier because they know that they have someone to go to and they don't have to feel any of that shame about having a disease at all.
There shouldn't be that kind of shame. Fact is, a person with a vision impairment doesn't get up in the morning and say, oh, I better hide the fact that I see the world a little differently.
But it's like how we talked about it in previous shows, like with depression and things like that. It's not until you start talking about it that four eyes gets eliminated from the dictionary.
So, what are the next steps for you and your work for Crohn's and colitis?
So independently, I'm going to be organizing some more events since the Gutsy Walk is over, so they no longer need a Gutsy chair. So I'm putting together a bikini fashion show fundraiser at Arius Nightclub where I work, and that's going to be on July 1st to celebrate Canada Day, and we already have a lot of support for that. And I think that it's just like the momentum coming off the Gutsy Walk and friends and connections that I have who know what I'm doing and support what I'm doing and believe in all of that. So I'm really excited to have a lot of my friends come out, and I hope that we raise a lot of money.
So if you could see any one thing added to our understanding of Crohn's and colitis, what would it be?
It's that we're trying to end the stigma here too, right? With disabilities, we always talk about ending the stigma, and this is a disability like not any other. We want to break that barrier and show people that having Crohn's and colitis doesn't mean, like, it means that you're sick, right? But it doesn't mean you're dysfunctional and you're not any less human than anyone else out there.
So, how do you go about dispelling the myths through your work?
I think you'd be surprised. I challenge you listeners to go out there and start talking about Crohn's and colitis, start talking about volunteering about it, and you'll be surprised to see how many people approach you that have Crohn's or colitis, and you never knew, because there are so many of them out there who just don't feel they like don't need to tell you, right? But as soon as you start supporting this charity, then they'll come out to you, and you'd be surprised, because you'd think that they were the healthiest people in the world, just like you.
Sounds like a great event you have coming up. I'd really encourage people to get involved. So, how do they go about it?
Well, the event that we're having is a fashion show on July 1st to celebrate Canada Day that will be at Arius Nightclub inside of Caesars. And I'm looking for girls who have Crohn's and colitis to come out and model in the fashion show along with the other girls. And if you're interested, you can email me at Joanna, J-O-A-N-A, S-Z-E-E-N at gmail.com.
This would just be an amazing thing, and I would encourage anyone out there in the audience just to take a chance, do something new, might even have a lot of fun. Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you so much, Cam, for having me.
Always a pleasure. Today's episode, my friends, is all about people's right to contribute. Fact is, whether it be someone who simply wants to communicate, wants to know the joy of fishing in a group, or someone who wants to get out there and tell the world, I have this condition, don't judge based on that. It's all about the right to be a part of this community, to be respected and understood. Joanna brought up one of the critical points in all of disability life when she was giving her interview. Fact is, stigmas and myths, they have no place in the world today. We can't assume we know what a condition is. For any given condition, there's always some advancement, some progress being made. Even if it's something as simple as a person asking a question, is this really as hopeless as I think it is? So we can't just say we know what Crohn's and colitis is, or if a person can't speak in the traditional sense, they never will, or people with disabilities can't get out there and fish. It's not up to us as a society to look and describe limitations to a person. It's up to us to say, these are the circumstances. How can I work with it? And how can I bring the light to the public? Joanna's upcoming fashion show she alluded to, that's raised some concerns, she told me, about people with scars and what have you who've been affected by Crohn's and colitis. I don't think that this is something we should really shy away from. Beauty is not judged simply based on the way a person looks. It's judged by strength of character, integrity, intelligence, and what potential they have to offer the community. On that basis, all life is beautiful, because every life has something to contribute. So a woman gets out there and has a scar. Big deal. The fact of the matter is, it's one little aspect of who this person is. It is not something we as a society should shy away from. We should look at a scar or such a mark and say, that's a sign of strength. This is a sign that this person has a condition, but they've learned to live with it. They have learned to use their greater strength. They have learned to become someone who can master the circumstances. Someone who, yes, they may face a challenge day by day, but have they let it consume them? Have they let it rule them? No. They have chosen to make a public statement. I am living, breathing, beautiful human being. That's how it should be with all types of disabilities. You need not hide in the shadows because you think the world might get the wrong idea. As our good friend Dave Squeaky Wheels pointed out, we are the largest minority. The truth is, disability is simply a part of life. It's not something we should be ashamed of or afraid of, or even afraid to get out there and present in a very public way, which is exactly what the Fishing Derby and the Gutsy Walk did. They showed this community these are capable people who deserve to participate in exactly the same way. And Joanna's next step forward, the fashion show, these women should be a part of it. They should get involved. If they want to raise awareness, let them raise awareness. Scars and all. It is not something to be shied away from. A person with a vision impairment tends not to be ashamed of the fact that they see the world a little differently. A person with paralysis need not be ashamed that they get around a little differently, because it is one part of who they are. If you stop and think about Dr. Stephen Hawking, first thing that comes to mind is not his disability. It is not his condition. It's the fact that he is most likely the smartest man in the world, that he has contributed so very much despite the fact that he has a condition. Yes, a lot of people do look at that. It is an important circumstance. But is it all defining? Is it something to be ashamed of or to hide from? No, it isn't. For the fact is, we can't have a set of community-based activities for people with disabilities and some for the able-bodied. You start separating. You start building up these standards. Before too long, you have a standard and an ideal nobody can live up to. And that is not something we as a society have a right to impose. We have a right to see these people succeed, to be a part of it all, to bring who and what they are to light. And maybe, in so doing, we as a society have the right to learn from these people, to grow, to get out of our own shell of myths and stigmas, if you will, to become people who just want to understand their fellow human beings. And that is a journey we should all be making. Shouldn't be shying away. We shouldn't be saying, this is different, I dare not look upon it. We should say, this is diverse, and I want to understand. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.